We are regular session meeting. Resilient Center, December 10th at 9:10 a.m. Pardon. Oh, I call it. Congratulations. Here is an order sign.
Allegiance to the flag, the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all. Okay, I will call Dr. Mora,
Present.
Dr. Sloan, Dr. Armstrong,
Here.
Dr. Kwiatkowski,
Here.
Dr. Turney,
Here.
all present. And then if we can just approve the order of the agenda, and then we can go with session items.
I'll second. Director Swan, Director Armstrong, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed say nay.
Mitchell. At item, I don't think you do it. They've decided to clear this next month, but I don't know their person.
Okay, so because we're on the agenda item, do you want to pull that from the agenda right now?
Yeah, we can.
Okay, so do you want to make an amendment to the motion then?
Correct.
Want to. No,
it's meeting date, right?
Yeah, because I would like to amend this one. Items. Item 70 for discussion consideration to amend the board of policy. Regarded the made it to the regular meeting day.
I second.
I just to make note, since we're not we haven't called for public comment, since there's no public in the room to make public comment on that. Correct.
So we'll just kind of back up then. Let's call for any public comment. There's none online either.
You just can't call a comment from the room.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
It's based out. So the motion to remove item 7D was made by Dr. Swan and seconded by John again.
Yes.
Yeah. All in favor say aye.
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 And aye.
Yeah.
Now we will move into closed session. MA in closed session is a conference legal counsel. Five six dot 1, case number B6329, and defendant community service district.
I think that it's okay if you read both items and then ask for public comment. And a closed session.
Okay. And then item E is a conference with legal counsel, the litigation. The initiation of litigation pursuant to 5956-9B4. Special cases. Right.
So we can.
Yeah.
And then check the time, and then I will pause on the recording.
Time is 9:15. We will reconvene open session at 10:25. Announcement for the settlement agreement is by 5-0 vote, the existing litigation described in closed session item A, Board X settlement. For item B, the board gave direction to staff. So now we're going to move on to our regular item.
Yes, and I think that we left off at asking for public comment.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Wayne, do we have any public comment? Anybody online? Anything?
Men.
Okay. Okay. That reports starting with a well represented fire attorney.
Morning, Barb Wilner, Rangers, GCSD staff, members of the public. We have a spill with CAL FIRE, a special guest today, staff. Well, I didn't make the report, but I'm here to present it. So let's see what we have in store. Monthly call totals range to 781. 781 responded to 26 medical aids, 0 structure fires, 0 vegetation fires, and 1 other type of fire. No traffic collisions, 0 hazardous conditions. Public, 10 public service calls for a total of 37 calls. One all auto aid call. As you know, you're providing additional services to the county within co-housing engine 631. They ran 15 medical aids, 1 structure fire, 3 public service calls, and 4 aids to the district for a total of 19 calls for the month. Let's see. Significant incidents. Tuolumne Trails apparently have a nuisance fire alarm. They responded several times to Tuolumne Trails for a fire alarm sounding. Sounded like there was an issue with the control box. They spoke to representatives of Tuolumne Trails about it, and they had it fixed. We're no longer responding there for that problem. Fire prevention in progress. Highway 120 incident. October 26th at 4:43 p.m. DCSD Engine 71 responded to a smoke check near Highway 120. Upon arrival, crews located an active burn pile. Responsible party was advised that although it is currently an open burn period, it was a designated no-burn day per the Air Pollution Control District. They were reminded to verify burn day status prior to conducting any burning. Pretty great picture of it. I don't know if that's
it's on the television.
Pretty scary. It would look like it was touch and go.
Control.
Yeah. Yeah. Apparatus status. Looks like all district apparatus is in service. Training. Guys are doing lots of training. But we've done some training at the airport for commercial fires and high water flow applications. Engine 7 in 1, Engine 631, and on fire attack and pump operation. Focus on the first new engine initiating fire attack and the second engine arriving at an established water supply. We call this bread and butter training. It's fundamentals. Battalion training that everybody participated in putting chains on, which so far has proved that we don't need it this winter. Hopefully that changes soon. But it's a vital skill, and it's something you forget how to use if you don't do it. So it's good to train on it. Fire department news, the CERT team conducted firewise focus meeting to review local wildfire risks and discuss preparative strategies for the community members. Receive guidance on defensible space, home hardening process, and upcoming firewise outreach activities. It's like we had a CERT team training. Look at all those CERT members on there.
Look at that.
Remember when I was working here, I think we just started the CERT team, and now look at them. There's tons of them.
Very,
very good.
That's great. That was the whole goal of the program, get community involvement. GCSD Engine 71 and TCFT Engine 631 participated in joint training for CERT basic training at Firefall Ranch. While they were there, they assisted CERT by providing a burn belt for fire extinguisher use and showed them the correct way to use a fire extinguisher. Fire cribbing.
Oh.
They also provided cribbing and showed them the proper techniques to crib a patient out if they ever were trapped by an object. We assisted the cadre with their final scenario. Everyone did a great job.
It's still CERT hours.
Let's see. More fire department news. Looks like all the extrication tools have been serviced, had their annual maintenance. Everything is good to go, ready to be used. Breaking news, the garage door opener at Station 78 broke. Had a new one replaced, and while they were at it, they found the other one. Yeah, so they had a two-for-one placement method employed.
Work really well.
Other news, this month, this is highly important. The HVAC at the station failed. Have to have air conditioning.
Actually, in these pots.
Yes. With 5 people in there at a time, it gets warm.
It's a lot of hot air.
So it is.
Definitely. Like, still to read.
So the HVAC system and the furnace both replaced. Apparently, they're both 25 years old. Miraculously, they were older than some of the employees that work there. Anyhow, that does it for this month's fire department news. Look at those red doors. Pick that color. See what they were doing.
And the white one.
Yeah, we don't want to talk to you.
I saw nothing.
That does it for the report. As always, thanks for having us, and we're proud to be able to serve the community for you.
By far the most.
That's your Seville cast for the day.
If you guys remember, Kevin was our captain for a handful of years, and was responsible for writing the grant that brought the SUV Gulf Station. And we miss his humor and enthusiasm very much.
Did you stand up on the side?
What's that?
Oh, stand-up comedy.
Oh, it's more shirts than anything. I don't know how to be serious.
We'll be performing at the Horn one of these days.
Yeah.
Morning, Taurus. You're Battalion Chief, County Fire, GCSD. Actively trying to recruit Kevin every single time I see him to come up here and be a second captain. So, you know, hopefully he'll say yes one. As far as fire department news for Cal Fire, we'll be switching to winter preparedness mode on Monday. So what that means is basically downsizing from our 22 engines. From 2 dozers is going to go down to 1 dozer on call. Most days it's going to go down to GC or Groveland having 1 engine through the winter. PO staff, winter fuel projects like that. Blanchard will switch to Amador staffing, which is minimum 2-0 staffing. The county picks up that second firefighter position there, and then we're going to try to keep it go as much as we can. The extra personnel coming from other stations that'll close down. Lingard is another Amador station that'll open up or continue to be open through the winter time, which minimum 2-0, but we're going to try to keep that PO staff. Bill's crew stay staffed through the winter time for those projects. And county business is ran as usual. 5 engines, 2-0 staff minimum. Yeah, good report for me. Any questions?
It's a lot of thank yous. Great. Moving on to see if I have a
topic. It's going to be hard. Number one piece of news for me is that after the back surgery, the doctor says I'm clear, I'm good, I can stand up. Oh.
That is good news.
I start with the smaller stuff and move up to the bigger stuff. So, GCERT, we instituted a new application to allow our members to communicate amongst themselves during an incident without using the cellular, without using our cell phones and so forth. So we're using that. We're also going to be scheduled this spring for training with OES so that we can man the telephones when there's a countywide incident. We're starting our monthly meetings in January. They're the last Saturday of every month through October. Come up with a schedule shortly. And now the most important part of all,
He had a basic training class. The context of this is that the probably the largest training class of CERT people in the county. And it worked out really nicely. The instructors, who you'll see pictures of, normally they go all over the country, and then normally they're doing the training in a gymnasium, staying in motel things. They stayed at Firefall Ranch at the event center, and it was a little different for them. So they said that they would be happy to come back and train again anytime starting next week. So anyway, the thank yous, Wyoming County OES provided the student backpacks. Every student gets a backpack to start. The instructor lodging and training space was provided by First Light Resorts, Firefall. The training materials, the instructors and expendable materials were funded by the Sonora Area Foundation. And we had tremendous help from both GCSD and County Fire. Among other things, they helped with the exercises and they made great victims. So if you want to do the slideshow, show you an idea of what we were doing. So we were getting ready for everybody. Badges, guess we're all laid out. Janice gave us the opening statement, welcoming everybody on behalf of GCSD. I
want you to know that started out with, good morning, everybody. It's 6 o'clock at night.
Good morning, everybody.
I did.
She didn't correct us.
No. I apologized for
it's
you. I apologize for it. I made it humorous. It's okay.
Well, this is the first session right after Janice. This is the sheriff's deputy talking about active incidents. Next morning, some of our current team were there to participate and help. Our first exercise, a lot of exercises Saturday and Sunday, people were involved with. This is how we're organizing. You can see there are lines of people, and this is organizing for a mass casualty incident. And basically, you'd hold up a sign, you would be a triage team, you would be an extraction team, various teams, and explaining how this was all organized. And as more volunteers came on board, how we would implement or how we would position them. And of course, we had the tour of the engine. We did both sides of the engine.
Yes.
And then the most important part of the whole thing, the fire guys got a chance to start a fire. They did a great job, although they had trouble keeping it burning. I'm not sure the fire burning in the foreground was a success. But anyway, now we're into improvised carrying and so forth. The safest way to do that. They were thinking about it, but that's one of the other instructors, so they took care of their own. This was about how to move victim, and you'll notice one of the people demonstrating it is our own Dory Beats. There, they're ready to carry them off. We had four instructors. We also had explaining fire hydrants, where the hose goes and where you turn it on. It was complicated. This is when we got into the cribbing exercise, where we're dealing with an object that is too heavy, and we have to use other methods to make sure it doesn't come back down. This was an interesting exercise. We got the team ready at the left-hand side and the right. They're all blindfolded, and they're going to go into a building and find a victim. And they're relying on each other in the team. Do it. This was on the one end of the food service area of Firefall. You had a victim inside. They found the victim, brought him out. Here we're talking about how to deal with, here we go, starring our own Bob Turney. We're talking about how to do splinting and care for major wounds. Here we're doing victim assessments, how you go about assessing injuries to a victim. And we were able to handle all sizes of people, including arm's length size. And this is how we triage. There's three different colors of tarps there, and there's a fourth one that's way down at the other end, which is a black. And so we are separating or triaging victims, placing them on the different colored tarps. And then, so again, this is would be in the mass casualty incident. There actually are places where we could have mass casualty incidents in this part of the South County. We can start with Rush Creek. Firefall would be an opportunity. The Grill would be an opportunity. Both schools here at a big event. So there are opportunities for this. And so this is how the extraction team would bring them in here, and they'd be triaged and separated into these four different areas. And then treatment would ensue as appropriate. For red is very immediate care. The yellow is not quite so. The green one is okay, but you can't go yet. You can pretty much figure out the black one. And there we are. We did it. So that's the new team. There were three groups of people. There were those that do want to be a CERT members. There are those that don't want to be a CERT member but took the training, and that's perfectly fine. That's part of what CERT's about. And the middle group is, well, we don't know yet. So we're including them in what we're doing. So there we are. Wait, back up. I want to thank the gentleman on the far left in the red for coming. And there's our PCSD banner. That's the team and the fire guys. Now part of the GCSD team. And then there's the congratulations people. So one by one, one of the things to me that said how the group had worked together and so forth was as they were handing out the certificates one by one, the applause, the group applause for the last person was just as loud as it was for the first person. So I know, Bob, do you have any comments you'd like to add about?
Oh, that was an excellent course. Those instructors were amazing. You get them up here anytime. I'll be supporting you on getting as many people. Sure. It's one of those things that I'm kind of surprised that's the biggest group that got up here. There's no question. It's a good night. About a fourth of the group saw from the airport?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was kind of one of the things I was at is that you had an organization that took. No, you don't have to be, you know, get certified to be a part of it. There's no question the information that we learned on here is going to be beneficial to our own family and friends just because we live up here. Being able to help these guys out, you know, on top of it, just to their assets. So getting more organizations to realize the benefit with their own members to show up and do this.
Yeah, and I basically, you know, we're kind of out here on an island by ourselves. I've spent most of my life in San Mateo County, and we could get six engines on scene in 6 minutes. And the fourth engine in here comes from what? Coulterville, Columbia? It's more than 6 minutes. So we're kind of on an island on our own here, and if something really serious happens, it's going to take all hands we get. So
just last season, I happened to be on site all with three different fires. I wish I had this one. So it was right there when it started burning right behind Echo.
Well, and I forget the name of the group, but there's a group at the airport that's been organized and part of a statewide effort for people that can fly to go get supplies and bring them in. And so if our 120 is ever severed, they can go fly, get supplies. I think it's, was it CalDART is the name of it. And so anyway, our community of people that are trained and so forth are getting bigger all the time. So we start our formal, actually the first meeting is on your 17th meeting here. So somewhere around, I'm having them come somewhere between 11 and 11:30, and we'll do a swearing in ceremony. That time you get a chance to meet all of those and have pizza. You guys can go. That's the pizza, Sarah slices.
You should be
just
all over stations.
Don't forget the B station. There are people still at the B station.
Yeah.
Bring them. So anyway, any questions about
that? You and your team did a real good job, so I appreciate it.
Janice did a good kickoff, and Bob did a good congratulations at work.
I believe you didn't want me there on that particular Sunday. I fully intended to be there. I was left at home. Push me to the back room and said, that's where you stay and don't come near me. So I missed out, but I'll tell you, the level of effort you and the entire CERT team has put into this is just beyond the visions that we had from the beginning. I just think it's so much appreciated, and it's such a huge benefit to the matter what the incident is, or even if it's not an incident, it's an event. Whatever it is, it really is, it's a high level of benefit to the entire community, to GCSD, to the fire department. Much appreciated. Thank you for the effort.
I was floating around on the ocean. Otherwise, I would have done it.
When do you have a house?
Just worse.
Go live on a ship.
Are you still in the back room?
Oh, that was just
snuck out for today.
For several, that was. It's not talking about talking. Where
are you, bad boy?
My girlfriend Paula was at that retired nurse surgical and wound care. Said it was an excellent.
It's good.
Probably joined.
You did.
Yeah.
Paula?
Yeah.
We're on to operation.
So Louie's not here right now. Mm-hmm. But he's having questions. I mean, he might come in later. So.
Maybe for
how are we doing on the alternate? Water,
so. That's actually on the agenda, so you will get completely filled.
And then we shall move to.
Okay, so for our document management and records program, we have made significant progress in the district record management program over the last month. The board had authorized approximately, I think it's like about $15,000. For us to begin the process of digitizing district records. We did go out and solicit several quotes, and we received several back, and they ranged from about just over 50,000 to over 300,000 dollars. For the digitization of our records. So I kind of ignored it for a while and was trying to figure this out, because we've been working through this, you know, project for several years now, just trying to figure out how we get there. We don't have a large staff, and it's a big job. So after some consideration, I had decided that I thought the best course of action was to engage and bring on a temporary employee specific for the purpose of at this point, scanning records and organizing them into our laser fish. So Pete and I had this discussion. We went through whole scope of work, and last month we brought on a temporary employee. It's actually the wife of one of our employees, Adam Altweed. It's his wife, Jen Altweed. They have a lot of experience in administrative, an administrative background. So she was very the ability and skill to at least perform this level of where we're at right now. Since she has been on, so we decided our most voluminous records right now are property or maps and property files. We have thousands of property files and thousands of maps. So she has just in the last month, she has reported that she has scanned over 819 of her maps, and with 661 of those actually being imprinted. So it's not like you're just scanning something and throwing it into a folder. You're scanning things. You're looking at the map to ensure that everything is captured. The image is clear. You add things that are called like tags and templates to them. So they're very easy to pull down later in the future. So there's quite a process once you scan something to actually get it into the LaserFish software. So I'm very happy to report that we are having, some good movement on moving that process forward. The other thing that LaserFish does is it's the workflows, which I've kind of touched on in the past, but essentially workflows are automated. It's an automated tool that will route documents, collect information, and trigger specific actions based on rules that we define. This replaces the manual steps for like approvals, notifications, filing. We have worked with LaserFish staff to help us start the process with really simple forms like escrow demands. Right now we're looking at launching the dog park permit application because it's that time of year. So very, very simplistic form, see how that workflow goes. And right now we currently have Megan and Andrea with our staff that are working towards getting that launched. So we are making progress in that component of the LaserFish software as well. We had also begun a record of board actions. So we've developed a comprehensive record of board actions spreadsheet that hyperlinks minutes, resolutions, and agreements specific to the board meeting. So it's a one-stop shop, essentially, where you have a board meeting and you can access all the documents from this one sheet. Instead of us having to go back and have minutes in one place, resolutions in another place. I mean, these are all stored in their own place, but these will now link from just the specific meeting. We're working backwards with that. So we have gone from, so far we have 2025 through 2020. And we have Rachel and Andrea who are working on it. So that will be a really beneficial tool, at least like from us and management's perspective, because we go back to board records very frequently. And then the other thing is you have the policy manual updates, which is on our agenda today. That is was a very extensive process that we're very grateful to Rachel for, because she was working on this project for about 2 years. And then when we got pretty close to finalizing it, we decided that we wanted to combine them all into one policy manual. So one of the biggest challenges is actually the formatting. I mean, you'd think the writing of the policies is a little tedious, but when you get into formatting, it's a nightmare, especially when you have a document that's over like 600 pages. So very appreciative of that. And hopefully today we can prove that and move forward. Finance and administrative systems. So also today we are looking at SDR main incentive points. These are the points that we receive for going to certain courses, educational things, and we get discounts on our insurance. One of the things I noticed looking through that was positive pay. I'd never heard of it before, but is a fraud prevention service offered for bank accounts for essentially public agencies or commercial businesses that we could receive incentive points for. I looked into it with Mechanics Bank and was surprised to learn that we don't have any fraud protection whatsoever on any of our accounts. I thought there was some level. They say that they attempt to recover costs, but there's no guarantee. And knowing that we were, that's pretty vulnerable, and especially given the climate today and there's fraud everywhere. So I went through that, met with the representatives from Mechanics Bank, and they gave us a significant discount to place this service on both our operating account and our payroll account. I signed those documents yesterday and sent them over, and they're effective as of today. So what it essentially does, it is allows us to submit a list of all approved vendors or payments, electronic payments that are acceptable. And if they see things that look out of the ordinary, we get a notice and we have to physically approve that for it to be issued for payment. So that's in place. So we're ultra protected and we receive SDRMA incentive points for that. One of the other things we've been extensively looking at is a new credit card merchant for processing all of our auto pay, customer utility payments. Currently, right now, the district pays approximately $45,000 annually just in credit card merchant fees, which is a lot. We do not pass on a fee to customers at this point. However, it's getting to the point where we're going to have to start. I don't know anywhere where you can pay more without having some type of a surcharge. So we've been evaluating that, but it's been a little difficult making it fit with our utility billing software. Some of, like, one of the ones we looked into, the auto pay would only allow you to have a fixed amount, not a variable amount based on whatever the customer's bill is. So we're still evaluating that. We think we have a merchant that we would like to move forward with. We're just looking a little bit more into it, and we'll be bringing that back to the board at a future date. The line of credit that we brought to the board last month that we approved, we ran into just a couple of snags regarding the signature process and the verifying identification, but we worked through that, and just yesterday we actually signed that agreement. So legal counsel reviewed all of it. We were good to go. So we do have access now to that $2 million line of credit, which has made Michelle very happy, because we have a lot of reimbursement costs going out right now with the grant projects. And ClearGov, Michelle has been working with them to start configuration and implementation of the financial modules. Brief up on that.
Yeah, so basically what that is, it's going to give us the ability for me to upload financials in real time, put it on our website, so it's for transparency. And then also getting it set up for year end for next year, which is already 6 months away again, so that we could do the year-end audit and financial statements in-house, not the audit, but financial statements in-house. So I'm working with them to get that set up.
Yeah, and that's, again, with our process to transition away from Gilbert and Associates, who have been the ones who have predominantly been taking care of the financial statements at the year-end for our audit. Speaking of the audit, we have the audit presentation that Michelle is preparing for with our quarterly board meeting, which is going to be on December 17th, 2025. Michelle did an excellent job with that, and she'll go into more detail, but received a clean audit, and everything was good on that front. The last thing is grants. So he and I hustled right the day before Thanksgiving to get a planning grant submission to the Sierra Nevada Conservancy for the planning of the phase two of the Hetch Hetchy Trail. So this is essentially an application to be invited to apply for the actual grant submission. So we submitted that, and yesterday we met with tribal members regarding their interest and engagement in the trail process as a whole. And it was a very good meeting, a very positive meeting. It's also a very significant component of having a desirable grant application. And we plan to have a trail walk with them soon, say before the end of the year. That's my...
And on the credit card, are we going to actually see completing the ACH?
We do offer ACH right now. It's just, yeah, you can sign. We've had ACH. It's just not through the web portal. You have to actually come in and sign up for it with a form. It's kind of archaic. We are looking into that. One of the programs that we have, one of the companies we've looked into offers it. However, they charge a fee for it, which most of the time, that's how you get out of the fee, is like, you can use a credit card or you can pay with your bank account. And this service still charges you for ACH transactions.
Less than a credit card.
Yeah, it's less than a credit card. I think it's 2%.
2%.
The one that we're looking to transition to. They charge for both credit card and ACH.
So what's the free possibility of paying your card with a check?
Yeah, you pay with a check or cash. We still accept cash.
Like I have it just set up on my ePay through Wells Fargo. So that doesn't, you don't pay.
Yeah, that's just a check essentially.
Yeah, so it's the same thing. Sorry. It's a customer.
Anything goes self-employed for the past 40 years and seeing more and more how people are passing on the cost of the processing to the customers. I've never been an advocate of it. You know, I've always said it's cost of doing business. But I'm seeing it more and more and more. Be doing it myself again. I'm contemplating having to do the same thing. I know, boy, the crap is going to hit the fan when we start charging the customers. Yeah.
We don't want to, and we've held off as long as possible, but you have to remember we have a huge group that doesn't use credit card, and they're the ones subsidizing essentially the payment for it. They're sharing it at cost.
There's no source of revenue to subsidize it, so it's potentially subject to legal action just because the state constitution doesn't allow us to be able to take one class of customer and charge them benefit of someone else. In other words, if they can benefit from it, great. The only benefit we can say they get from it is pay that. So it's kind of a situation that we just need to monitor closely. But obviously, credit card companies just keep.
And that's why I'm kind of leaning
offering more incentive
in this direction, just because the process going through the roof.
Yeah, it's very convenient, but again, you have the option of cash or check. You don't have to pay those fees. You just have to
ask them, like the first year I was, we don't pass on the credit card.
We do now.
If you now. You get to.
I mean, I agree with Bob. I've always thought that's the cost of doing business, but virtually everyone out. So it's not like we started doing it. People shock, like, gosh, I've never heard
of this.
Most people are shocked when they find out we don't have a fee.
Yeah.
Like how it was kind of more or less, you know, being a business owner for so many years, understanding the nature of it, and, you know, my own policy with, you know, being cost of business, but seeing this way the, you know, economics are going. People are doing it. I have a choice. The consumer is going to not benefit. Well, they're going to benefit back to the fast degree of having an additional charge to do it. Go write a check.
Paying cash. Yeah, they're like one of those girls that, you know, like just paying cash.
Money's better.
I think it would be worth a post if British staff agrees to encourage people to set up let the public know that the district's shelling out that much money every year, or is that something? I don't know, we can talk about that later, but I also had a question about the hyperlinks. Is that all going to be available on the website as well, or is that just internal for you with the new hyperlinking to board actions that you talked about?
Oh, no, that's an internal.
That's just all internal. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, they have access. There's hyperlinks to,
right.
They can go on the agenda, get the material. The minutes are posted there. The audio is posted there. This is more for like records management.
Probably make it easier for us to populate issues. Let's say we identify something that's a big popular discussions,
mm-hmm.
because we won't have to search, oh, remember this, oh, remember
yes.
that, oh, it was here.
I'm asking.
It'll all be together, and then we can populate that particular thing much easier. Load it on the web and have us link to it. Or something.
Great.
Anything else, Jen? Alrighty, we are. How about Michelle?
Dr. Just a little bit of if you have any questions, I'm going to focus on primarily the project end of it. I could just done a good job summarizing where we are on the projects. The sewer project is almost done. The water distribution system improvement project, which is the pipeline that goes from Groveland to Big Oak Flat, substantially complete. They're putting a few finishing punch list touches on concrete around concrete bases around fire hydrants, clean up, that kind of stuff. And should be done fairly soon. They're doing a good job. We executed a change order. In fact, I just executed it today about a lot of the tree removal there. We had to realign that pipeline a little bit. If you notice, it kind of looks like a trail back in there along the highway between Groveland and Big Old Flat. That is not really a trail. It's just it's an easement that we're acquiring for the purpose of moving the water line further off of the highway. Makes it much easier to maintain and repair and replace in the future, all that, instead of having to go through the Caltrans hassle. That was at the authorization of the property owners to allow us to move it out. Obviously, they have some development plans there, but anyway, that we had to remove a bunch of trees and other things to make that happen. So there was a $50,000-some-odd change order executed on that project. And now that happened, like I said, the sewer project is just has punch list items. The well project is proceeding and will be done by the deadline that I have is the end of February. Everything has to be wrapped up by the end of February. There's no money to be had after February except for the retention, because the state retains 10% of the invoices, and then we request that. Yes. But the projects will have to be complete. This the DWR grant by February 28th. We've got the AWS project. We talked about that last month. I sent you a follow-up email on that, just to let you know that the city and county of San Francisco had extended their tunnel shutdown until December 16th at the earliest. They have since withdrew that as of yesterday afternoon. They issued us a notice that they were going to be shutting down today at the end of the day. We had our targets and all of our schedule plan, all of our Gantt charts, everything we had to do scheduled to be online tested, calibrated, and running perfectly by 16th. That was it at the earliest. That notice yesterday afternoon at about 4:30 was really kind of exciting. I gave you really good news by saying, hey, it's extended out to the 16th. We should be able to get everything done, which we will. We don't have the same concerns, but that was, we'll let them know how we felt about that yesterday afternoon. Short, it was 24 hours that they're going to shut it down when we had no idea, absolutely no indication they were going to move it up a week. And again, that shutdown means we have no water supply to treat except for Pine Mountain Lake, and we're still finishing up that AWS and the Pine Mountain.
That's where Louis is, by the way. Trying to start
a potato. He's out there, kickstarting that plant. Because we need to. But they confirmed this morning then, because yesterday afternoon, after we had some email exchanges, they said, okay, it'll be Thursday or Friday. Then they confirmed this morning it'll be Friday afternoon. They will be generating power today and tomorrow. In reality, they've been watching how we've been getting things done. Things have been progressing, and we've been able to get the pipeline pressure tested. We've been able to get the AWS ready to go, had the generator going, and the power was going, and they were going to calibrate everything, and the generator blew up. Generator is being rebuilt. It's our generator. We had a backup, which was a rental, which was glad we had it. Allowed us to be able to move it right in and get it set up and ready to go. huge amount of coordination. You're talking about every minute of every day for Adam and Louie, at least. Andy, a lot of times, and you know, just have to hit on all cylinders to make this stuff happen. Can't wait to write the story when this is all done, because I'm convinced it's going to be a success. Man, I'll tell you, managing the three different contractors, having the portions of the project that had to be redesigned for whatever reason or another on the fly. Luckily, we have the majority of our contractors really good, and it's happening. They will be firing up that plant today. They're filling everything else with the existing plants because there's still water in the tunnel. So that'll be full. And hopefully, it looks like by the end of this week, everything will be running, calibrated, ready to go. You know, people don't have a clue. They have absolutely no idea how close it is to absolutely having no water, what level of effort it takes. You can't just tell the city and county of San Francisco and the Mike team, oh, you got to wait for us. We could. You're probably talking, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a day to put them on the clay. You know, I mean, and so that's the level of effort and drive and care that your operations and management team have. So it's been absolutely mind-numbing, the level of effort done. Luckily, we're there. Okay. We keep you informed. If something goes awry, plan on still having more. You can take a shower on Saturday. Okay. One other thing that we had at the end of his report, and I didn't realize all this, but project to run that pipeline from Groveland to Big Oak Flat and the hydrants that are being finished up and everything else right now, not only provides water supply to operate those fire hydrants and adequate water supply for Big Oak Flat and economic development there, but it also allows us to be able to shut the system down. Before, when you shut down to replace an air relief valve or a fire hydrant or anything else, the whole area went out. The pipe went out of water every time. Now we've got a redundant supply. We can run it off of the new line off of Harper and Black Road and keep it up. So you'll ever know if that we're replacing hydrants or air relief valves or anything else, AC pipe replacements or other capital improvements in Big Oak Flat. Well, use this to keep the water supply going while we're doing the work. Those are just really, really cool things. Before we lose all the buyer folks, and you can spread the word, we got notice today about the assistant the firefighter grant for replacement hoses, $1,600. I got that notice today. It's an $11,000 project in total. Places the hoses, the big 4 and the 5-inch hoses. So that's awesome. I'm sure we'll be getting that ordered soon. I got that notice today. And there's one other thing. Confirming the winter shutdown, the shutdown of the tunnel being on Friday afternoon. We'll get that message out. Other than that, everything has been just all hands on. I'm telling you, we're modifying our internal procedures on the way that we're documenting the construction projects. Normally, when you have construction projects, you're adding an extra, 10%, hire somebody to bring them in to manage the project and to understand the contract documents and not only do inspections, do documentation, like when the contractors you notice that they're doing defective work and documenting certain things exactly on time, exactly as it is in the contract, so that when you need to take action and have somebody come in and fix something that the contractor's not doing right, that you have all of the documentation in place to do it. We have I'm an inspector, but that inspector was trying to deal with 4 different projects going on at the same time and was not able to be at all places at all time. Especially when you get a contractor who's parking equipment in the middle of the road without any traffic control by Mountain Lake. and you know, or you know, out there operating an excavator with no traffic control and bumping into a truck that's taking up the entire. That inspector was going nuts, just trying to keep things safe. So there were. It costs us more in the projects to have that level of administration, you know, documentation, but we had to develop some procedures for the future so that we can assign responsibility to make sure that we've got these projects adequately staffed. Because we, you know, the last thing we want is these kind of litigation issues and other stuff that we're dealing with. And these construction contracts are very flaky. We got to get this. This showed us that we have to be more diligent in our documentation for the projects to make sure that we can take action. So in order to take a contractor off the job and get somebody else in, it seems like you'd just be able to do it. They're not doing their job. Take them out. That's not the way it is. They can issue a notice saying, we'll fix it. Then you got 30 days that you can't do anything. You know, it's that. If you document the defects, and if you make them do a remediation plan and basically hold their nose in it, then you can follow a procedure to bring somebody in, fix it, or to make them leave everything open, or to show that they're torquing every fitting before they cover it. I know that's a lot of technical stuff, but it's always a battle with contractors that are bad because usually they underbid a project and they want to make some money. So they're going to make money any way they can. These guys way underbid this project. I know they did. And they did it by just trying to rush it. Torquing fittings, and that really didn't have an idea. But now, we're able to at least preliminary pressure test it. We know the line's going to hold up. So we get turned on today. We're on until end of the shutdown.
Fortunately, I've been an estimator for the past. You know, back in doing a lot of commercial estimating, had to bid some jobs like that, bid them for the potential change orders.
Yeah.
You know, so went way down, but we knew that we were going to have a ton of change orders come up, so we bid them low.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's, you know, I mean, that is, it's not unusual. And there's some contractors that are the master at that. They know, they see the defects in the engineering documents right away. You know, that's why some entities, some districts will hire a third party to look at it. Their plans from a constructability perspective. Engineer does a great job of engineering things to work. Our staff does a great job of looking at, okay, yeah, we went over here, over here, over here. But when it comes to constructability, sometimes there's nobody really looking at it until the contractor does a pre-bid walk and they say, okay, I got some ideas on how this thing's going to work. Anyway. And the good thing is it's really helping. I know it's stressful on Louie and Adam, but when we get out of this, we're going to have some really solid procedures. We're going to have some really good understanding with the district engineer how things are going to proceed. We're going to know when it's time to bring in a third party for either constructability or additional inspection, admin classification on projects, and you know, dealing with claims. We've got the property owners of damages were happening, and we don't have the or video to show that what the condition was before we showed up. You know, that even though it was directed to happen, we're so busy trying to keep up with the excavator in the middle of the road that we didn't get the video of the next thing that was going to get broken. That's a lot of conversation really fast. So I'm gonna lay back on that and let you ask questions if you have any. The last executive committee meeting with the CSDA. Monday, as far as being president,
did the contract, the dispute with PG&E?
That's right. We wrote that dispute with PG&E. What was amazing is that PG&E said it was going to be 3 months before they get the work done. They did the work the next day. I don't know. You know, I mean, I can't figure out what the heck these guys feel, but they basically, when we met with them, that was the best thing we could do. We talked, we all met on the phone. They said they'd try to do something. They doubted they could do anything. And the very next day, they went out and shut the power off. And by that time,
your team had already figured out a workaround. See, you know, that's what we have to do. We can't just wait. Okay, let's see what PG&E is going to do. Wait, yeah. Steve and Louie and Adam were already working on a workaround, getting a generator that already had the panels so that we could, you know, but
question.
All worlds until the generator blew up. Now you rebuild the motor. Anyway, it's all coming together. Man, I am really proud of this. I can't wait for us to do a tour of this thing and just kind of see what all on there, because it's a great project for the future. It's been provides us an alternate emergency water supply, kind of extended drought or, you know, emergency conditions with the tunnel or anything else. And we're set up. Emergency supply to go flat. Fire hydrants are going to work if they go flat. All of this in the last 6 months. That's why Michelle is such a jewel. Watch the cash flow, to send up the alarms, you know, and appreciate the board's support to the flexibility to move through this. A lot of work. It's been great. Weight loss. First of the year, it's going to feel like a reboot. You know? Here's your Mrs. Seville. Huh?
Oh. Alrighty. We haven't checked on public comment for a while.
We only have Megan in the meeting. We don't really take public comment Zoom platform anymore, just in person. So.
So next on the agenda are multiple proclamations. It's the fun thing to do. Recognition of Anthony, you know, for his 16 year service to the district. Want me to just read them all and then they
Yes.
Together. And the next one is recognition of John Armstrong for his 15 years of service to the
I didn't realize it until just a tick.
And then also rebels from them, Janice Kwiatkowski, for her 8 years of service to the Grove Community Services District.
How many years?
Eight.
Oof. Yeah,
it says it right there.
Been here seven.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, my
so then just your experience with Anthony, just because of him kind of every chance when he just got hired.
16 years, I'll say.
Anthony is one of our assistants, dependents, knowledgeable treatment operators. He is he likes to keep his head down and kind of do his job and make sure it's done well. And yeah, you know, it's hard because I know Anthony probably more on a personal level than so much of like a professional level as far as what's specific to the everyday, you know, between pulling samples and all the stuff that Louie would be able to do a much better job with. But, you know, Anthony, that's a significant amount of time to give to the district. He's definitely an asset to the district and has a wealth of knowledge that would not be easily replaced if we were to lose him. I see Anthony more than likely finishing his career at the district. So that's a very good thing. He's got roots here. Family here. So, yeah.
Excellent, excellent work ethic. Very dedicated. There all the time. He's always a pleasure to be around. Yeah, genuine, nice person. Always happy. One of the team, you know? It's amazing that they've put so much time into their career here. And they're a huge value.
Is there any retention concerns with him?
No, that's what I was saying. I see him.
I just heard you mention
completing his
stuff like that.
No, I think we will. I think he will finish his career out at the district. He's just like I said. He's got roots. He's very vested, and it's difficult to make that transition. And even if you find something comparable, especially wages, but the district has done a really, really good job at keeping wages competitive. But in addition, it's the benefits that we offer that you just don't find in a lot of other places. And you don't also don't have that support that we give at the district. And we are very supportive. Nobody has any issue to ask to go to the events. Or, you know, there's just, you don't have that that environment where anybody has to worry about.
Sounds like AC Tap.
Yeah.
He's kind of offensive. Like, that's worth a lot of money right there.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot
of people. He's one that has been been there long enough that you watch the way that he reacts and listen to his input to make sure that we're doing the right thing, that's getting the environment that keeps us good. So he's very, very valuable. Look for the moved up from, I don't know if he did meter reading too, but
yeah, he started off as a meter reader and then he was in collection, then distribution, and now he's over in our he's been in our treatment department for years now.
He's grade three?
No, grade two.
Grade two. Distinguished. So I like that experience.
So I would like to, you know, thank both of these two, because obviously I haven't known John for his whole 15 years, because I haven't been here that long. But I have known Jen at Jen's from the very beginning. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, we had a little bit of a contentious board for a little while. And look at this, just worked it all out. And I think, you know, both great assets and good to work with.
I should have to say that this is the best that I've been.
Came in yesterday to get his packet, so it's telling. Same thing. He was just overwhelmed with happiness about how much he loves this board.
I slip him a 20 every now and then just to say that.
Pretty much so.
No, yeah,
it's
it all hasn't been fun.
It's like a night and day for one.
So far, I've been having a blast.
I use John's the story of John. I think it was the Monterey conference. I mean, I use it at every CSDA venue, especially like we had board orientation with three new board members that were coming on at this meeting on Monday. And, you know, it's important for me to kind of set the tone of what we are as board members for CSDA and what CSDA represents. But, you know, John, I mean, you told me the story about how you were so resistant in the early part of your career as a board member to outside training, to spending money on going out of town for these conferences and all this. Just, and that's very common in smaller districts that just don't, they just don't, haven't understood the value of that. And, you know, and then you got this person over here that just push. Let's go. Let's get the certifications. Let's get the training. And the work that we did among the whole board to talk about the norms and protocol and bringing people together and the way you act together. And then you jumping in and attending and the smile on your face, the, you know, the learning and the camaraderie and just the whole, it's just, it brings a new dimension to them. It was a hard thing to do. You transition from boards that were, you know, anti-staff and basically anti-district, you know, not understanding what their role was, to really stepping back and listening and learning. And not that you were doing it wrong by any means. It's just, it's a different, you know, we're in a different time.
Well, some of the boards, they were just, so, I mean, micromanaging. I even went through, we had a manager here. Me, micromanaging. I was glad with it. But, you know, it's been a ride.
it's a bad learning perspective. That's so appreciated because, you know, you let me manage. And if I fail to manage, then I know what that is, what's involved. But that's it allows it allows us to be able to maximize the, you know, the effort and the enthusiasm and the benefit internally, and, you know, bring it through the board. It's I tell a story about the, you know, the conversations that we had, you know, not anti-trading, but I mean just not really supporting it to the point where you were just elated to be part of the team and get that and get through that training and understand the full role and benefit of being a board member and everything. So that's the culture of good governance and the culture of, you know, what CSCA has been trying to bring into it. And then my perspective, Janice, has been you're one, the first one that I met, I think, in the office when I came in, you know. It's just getting to know you and getting to know what made you and what you're interested in and what you're passionate about, and then learning that you're passionate about everything. You want to get involved in everything you can and learn everything you can, and that's a huge benefit for the district to be involved like we are with LAFCO, and that's the future of it. Raises the bar for GSCSD as a whole, but it also as an industry, you know, throughout having active participation on LAFCO, having a chapter, CSCA, having the Community Services District, you know, with Bob and SGRA and you on LAFCO, it's an honor to be part of it. It raises the value up within the legislature, within CSDA, within all of the special districts. So, live up effort, and everything has been really appreciated.
Because I've been here in August. I just want to say, you know, it's interesting. I was reviewing the agenda, and I saw John specifically your 15 years, and I thought, wow, like, you and I read it the same, and I thought, I'm halfway through my career. Like, you literally had a whole career yourself, and you've done a half of somebody else's career as a board member. And we've gone through a lot of board members since you've been on board. You know, people, good board members, not so good board members. But, you know, most of the time it was the same where they just got frustrated with it and didn't want to do it anymore. It was easier for them to quit than to see it through. And you've seen it through very many different phases. And from a staff's perspective, you know, I'm very appreciative of it because we have had really good board members in the past. I couldn't do it for personal reasons. And as a staff member, that's really difficult to see those good board members leave a board because it makes us feel, I don't want to say necessarily abandoned, but it just makes our job a lot harder when we don't have those types of board members, but at the same time can understand and appreciate the scrutiny that is very difficult to sit through. And so I'm very appreciative of that. And Janice is same with you. And really it's all the board members. You have all been through very difficult, challenging times with the district, and every single one of you have seen it through. And it provides a level of confidence to myself and staff that it means a lot to have that peace of mind without having that stress of what kind of board are we going to have? What are we going to do? Do I need to start looking for another job? Because many of us were at that point, and it was because of the boards that we'd had in the past. And so thank you. We're very appreciative of it. No, it's not easy job. Don't get paid so much for doing it.
According to some person, we'd
in the dome.
Yeah.
No, it's been worth it. It really has, especially to see this now. And, you know, and Pete, you got a lot.
I need to share something because I live in San Lorenzo. San Lorenzo Water District. This is the board I know. This is the water district leadership I know and staff. And I was considering being a board member of our district, and I went to two board meetings and went, oh my gosh, that's terrifying. And the level of professionalism, the stick-to-itiveness that it's here is amazing. So I thought, well, maybe that's just that water district. So I went to another local and I was like, yikes. So it's fantastic. And I knew coming on when Janice did that there were challenges and we had reputation thing to fix and all that. And I knew that was members were our board meetings were a little bit wacky in the beginning and that got all resolved. But I knew like, wow, this is an really exceptional team. But after those two experiences, like it's blatantly obvious that this is like, you guys are killing it. And you guys work so well together and have been through so much tough stuff. Staff's holding on. You guys are, it's just incredible. So now I know firsthand. And then I thought, like, there's no way I'm joining that board. I can't, I'll go nuts. Because I would. This is not going to, it would be this. So.
But you can try to turn it into this.
Oh my gosh, I could. Yeah, but I have almost 10 grand
used to be this.
Oh no.
Because I thought about it.
Oh. I just want to say thanks again, John. I've been coming to board meetings since 2008. And you guys have your stuff together. Really are running the organization like it ought to be run. Not only congratulations to John, but all of you and Pete. I've just noticed a big difference. And I mean, even things like not going to bonds, doing things with grants. And the most important thing is that none of you have fallen asleep and tried to fall through the
Yes. That was.
Oh,
yes. Well, we haven't had the sheriff called on us either. And I've sat through meetings where the sheriff had to come in here.
So, ever since the grant term.
So, is there a CSDA that you fall into?
Never.
Is there a CSDA? Like the, yeah. We're going for the big thing. Is there one of those for the board?
We are with the platinum.
No, I don't think specific to just like the board.
Oh,
good idea.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. I mean, the functionality.
Yeah. The board to be modeled after. From what I've seen, those
stupid models. Model citizens.
Night and day. A lot of board members.
Yeah.
Need to order.
Some of the stories. Well, when a manager tells me, if you're going to, and they're basically telling me that they don't have flexibility to do anything, they can't manage the district. They're just following the policy of the board, whatever that policy may be.
That's not,
and that's it's weak management, and it's also, it's. And this guy, you really think that the board is great. I mean, they're elected to do a job, but you have to have your professionals to feed the information and decipher things constantly in real time in the field. And that's the flexibility and authority that you give us and the staff. But compliments the board.
I think some of it, like when I was a firefighter, captain's test and stuff like that. There's stuff in there. It says you manage somebody. You've got to let them go and let them do what they need to do. Let them make mistakes. That's how they. I think that's support is to put our trust in people who are actually running the district. I've always thought, well, I'm just one of five. We just need to run the let staff. That's what they do. We don't run the district. It's just supposed to say policy.
Thank you. Good job.
You guys are doing a good job. Makes it so easy.
Congratulations.
Yeah, we'll move on to a consent calendar.
Okay, yeah. Consent calendar.
Second. I'm sorry, I missed that.
Moved by Bob, seconded by John.
Thank you.
Thank you, firefighters.
Thanks for all you do. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Say aye. Any opposed, say nay?
We're good.
Now we can start going on some little items. The item 6A, adoption of a resolution approving, this is the right place, right? Approving the district's policy manual as amended to include the district's employee handbook, director's policy manual, and operational policies and in one document now known as the district policy manual.
Aren't we discussing this at 17?
Yes.
Dan, if you want to. We have the audit and quarterly financials and then a bunch of first stuff on the section.
Honestly, do you ever to bring back another, you know, it's a big topic. It's an entire set of policies that have been adopted by the board, adopted the personnel policy, personnel handbook separately. You move the board of directors manual into the operating policies and procedures manual. And now we have combined everything so that one manual, we've got every policy that has been adopted by the board organized in a policy manual. We know that there will be, because of the length of this, and it's absolutely impossible to read every page and every word, and every time we pick it up and really look in detail, we might find typos, might find references to a place that doesn't exist because we're combining multiple documents together. We do ask for your flexibility for us to be able to make those changes. But this has been a heck of an effort to pull this all together, and it sets the stage for the future to be able to make simple amendments to it, to be able to have easy record keeping and tracking, but not have redundancy in two different manuals, which we had before. We also, in this version, we removed the procedures part of it, not all procedures, because some of the policies have actual procedure in them, is written into the language, but things like the draft development agreement and the draft response to a liability claim, letter responses and different templates that are better just separate in an administrative manual. And basically an office manual that when we know we've got to get a letter out about an encroachment, we don't have to go to the policy manual. We go to an administrative manual that maybe has been updated a number of times. Because it's not the policy of the board is that we control our easements and that we have an encroachment permitting process. But the content of a letter advising someone that they're encroaching on the property is not necessarily a policy document. So we've taken those. Those were really spent. They take up a lot of space at the end of the OPPM. We're put in 2010. That whole back half of the manual was pretty much written by David McMurtry, but then legal counsel, during a time when we were negotiating with Long Gulch Ranch, and just after that, prepared for dealing with development projects and have a. Basically a guideline for staff. We still have that, so we've moved it. The things that don't belong in a policy manual are out in an administrative manual that unless the board wants to take action on that separately, it's going to be changed when legal counsel changes it. Staff might need to add for things that, different types of applications or electronic means for applications and things like that that are not necessarily a policy action. That was a lot of conversation, but we feel that this manual has been organized and reviewed to the point where it can be adopted as a little version, and we will make we'll continue to review and make changes as we see typos and different things like that. For instance, it's broken. And then the last part of the policy that I want to make light of is that we to also be organized where if you want a written version of it, it'll have to come in a binder because it's a lot of pages. They're coming in a binder with tabs, which are different sections. And then when we make changes to it, it'll be formatted so you pull a full section out, put a full policy number out for 1.2, whatever it is, and then you'll get a new one to put into it. We do it. I used to have it where the board members brought it in, and you changed it and gave it back to them. If you have a written version, a paper version, if you have an electronic version, you'll have a table of contents that's hyperlinked. You go through the table of contents and go right to the policy. Every time we have a change to a policy, we'll publish the entire manual. But there's no possibility. The old manual will go away. The new manual will come in, even with just one policy change.
Well, admitting that I have not actually read the entire text yet, working my way through. First of all, to move that we adopt Resolution 41, 25, and I'm not bothered to peddle still. I will second.
Want to hear the whole thing?
Go ahead, read it.
Kidding.
Singer.
Yeah, I bet you could. There we go.
You'd sing it.
So for item 6A, we had Bob Swan the motion and John seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Nancy, we have to remember to call comment though. I know. When we have Mario and Ronnie here. It's just good practice.
Well, I mean, we're looking around the room and we see that there's not public give comment. I wish the room was packed with people that hear all this kind of stuff.
I just get confused because last time it's like, oh, well, no, we don't do it. That's because we were on the screen. And then, it's like, I'll get back into it here. You know, I've been.
Yeah. We're all good.
Yeah.
She still has her sea legs.
Brain is still floating around. Okay. So we are at 7A. Adoption of a resolution authorizing the general manager to issue a request for proposals and retain a public finance consultant assessment engineer to prepare a this is funding measure.
So we're having fun? Yeah.
We're going to use the same thing we used last time.
Yeah, 1 second. So let's do it for the resolution. Chief.
Says one.
Oh, it doesn't have any internet.
We're going to use the same people.
I can't say no. We're going to do a request for proposals. But I expect that we will get proposals for others that may have better proposals. Right there, we go. I
okay.
Right. I see it. Okay. All right. So, I'm not gonna labor the information that was in your packet, but it's done a pretty exhaustive internal legal and a discussion. Among ourselves to get to the point where we have a recommendation on this, and there's reasons for the recommendation, and it'll come clear as we go through this. But the purpose of this, we've talked about it a number of times over the years, the fact that we're running short on revenue for the fire department, absolutely critical. We've definitely determined, and through our survey work, that we know that the local taxpayers want a local fire. They want control of the local fire department. They want to be able to have control of the level of service, and also make sure that
engine stays here and that it's staffed. We need a stable long-term source of fire funding. One thing that we want to evaluate in all of this is the opportunity to maximize the special benefits of property and people. We think that with a solid fire department, that we can affect insurance rates. We can stabilize that market. We can continue to do improvements. We can continue to get the grant money that we've been really successful with. Those can't happen when you don't have a fire department. Have that local understanding of what the needs are and people working on it all the time, don't get that benefit. So I think that the opportunity to maximize that benefit. And what we did is we wanted to talk about a special tax versus benefit assessment. This came about somewhat by our conversation at a recent meeting. I think it was in October. We talked about the communication plan for the fire department and for a potential measure. And there was discussion back and forth between benefit assessment and special tax and some concerns that were raised previously on the use of benefit assessments for fire services, and I hope this addresses that. And this is all in your staff report. This is summarizing that. It's nothing that was in there. The main things that we looked at were, number one, a special tax requires two-thirds voter approval. The great part about it is that it's a dedicated, stable source of revenue. It's very easy to spend a special tax on fire. It's not limited. You don't have to do assessment engineers reports. You don't have to do special documentation. You collect the money, and anything that is related to that fire department, top to bottom, you could spend it on. Okay, it's a predictable taxation structure, and it's straightforward to administer. We basically turn the tax roll in to the county, and the county applies that tax roll. It's a spreadsheet that shows exactly what the tax is to the county for collection. Challenges: two-thirds voter approval. So that is a challenge no matter where you go. The more urban you get, the more, the more blue-leaning areas that tend to support taxes, a bit easier. And more conservative areas, it's more difficult. This county has been particularly difficult. Not very many special taxes have been approved in history. One of the big things with us is absentee owners can't vote. Those that aren't registered to vote here cannot vote in a special tax election unless they register here. So that's a very, very significant component of the evaluation. There are rigid election timelines associated with the state with a special tax. And I have to apologize because the information that we gave you when we did the communication plan for the initiative was incorrect. I don't know exactly how we made the assumption that we didn't have to submit the measure until 88 days before. It's not that simple. It's the Secretary of State is the one who publishes that, and it's January 22nd. So I have to apologize because that communication plan was based on us getting a special tax measure, having the flexibility to do either an assessment or special tax measure, and having until 88 days before the election to be able to do it. But that was a misread of some component. I could just tell you, it's absolutely January 22nd. We have to submit the special tax, all of its legal review, the question from the board, and the question that we be going to the voters, the calculation and everything by January 22nd to get it on the June primary ballot.
Okay. Close the door. Heat the room, but it's freezing it.
Okay. Any question on just the special tax and the structure of it? Let's, so whole process. In your packet was also a line for approval of a special tax and a timeline for approval of a assessment. The second option that we looked at is a Prop 218, which is called the benefit assessment. There are various laws in the state that allow the creation of benefit assessments. These laws are very carefully crafted and require very specialized expertise to get them to the point where they can be voted on and defended in court if they're ever challenged. One of the big advantages is that with a benefit assessment, all property owners vote. Registered voters don't. Property owners do. So as a property owner, we get a mail ballot that says, would be a question just like it was a special tax in an election, but it would be calculated specifically and there would be backup documentation. It's a mail ballot and you return the mail ballot. Okay. So, and all property owners would get a ballot. It aligns cost with property-specific benefit. What that means, special tax, we have to apply uniformly. The California Government Code for Community Services Districts require that we apply a special tax uniformly. In other words, all residential properties, no matter what size, have to be this. All commercial properties, no matter what they are, have to be that. Okay? And vacant parcels, no matter what they are, have to be a thing. It's, which sometimes can cause controversy when there's not a lot of variable. With an assessment, you have a specific professional evaluation done that determines, it's not house by house, but it might all residential structures under 4,000 square feet. Or whatever, 5,000, whatever it is, or under a certain number, you know, under 5 bedrooms. I mean, I'm just throwing that out there. This is up to the assessment engineer, but it's based on what it takes, what level of effort it takes to defend that structure, what level of effort it takes to respond to a commercial fire in a 3-story building with an occupancy of 100 versus, you know, a retail shop. So that's what the benefit that property receives having the fire department, the impact on their property value and their insurance is identified. And the assessment can fund any part of the operations. They need to be very specific to the fire department operation. It has to be a special benefit. It can't be a general benefit to everyone, right? The only thing that an assessment can fund is what's considered a special benefit. And that special benefit has to be defendable in court. That's what, about the last time that the district looked at an assessment and was concerned about an assessment, the reason being there were a number of cases going on at that time that called into question whether assessments were a viable vehicle for fire funding measures. Because as you can imagine, if you're in an urban environment and you've got house to house to house, to business, 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 everybody touching, you got a fire department with a 5-minute response time, and then you got another fire station with a 5-minute response time, and then you got another fire station, you know, an assessment to maintain station number 3 that has this station over here and this station over here and this station over here, that's a general benefit. You know, I mean, that's a general benefit to the area. It maintains that response time standard that's higher than the NFPA standard. It's because of your discretionary action to set that standard. But in our case, the special benefit is having the fire department here. We don't have the funding. We don't have the fire department. You're not going to get insurance as easily if you can get it at all. You're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna save the lives that you would, unless for some reason somebody else decided to put a station in here. We can't predict. We just know that that special benefit needs to be very carefully documented. We've got a long list. If you looked at the RFP, request for proposals, scope of work in the packet, we took some time to identify all of the things that we want the consultant to go through that's special for our area that makes that really ties that special benefit down. And I think that's really important for us to meet that, you know, that technically complex engineer's report. It does take consultant support. Where the special tax, we probably could do it with minimal outside consulting work. Probably one quarter the cost. But, you know, we've got the two-thirds challenge. We've got the registered voter challenge. We've got the timing challenge, you know, when we can get it on the ballot. Those are the two main funding sources. Process timeline for a benefit assessment is, you know, these are estimates. We're working on a very minimum timeline. Just because we need the money right away. And we have that August, we call it August 1st deadline, county to get it on the tax rolls. We want to get it on the tax rolls for this upcoming year and get a payment in December 26. It has to be, we have to have a positive vote. We have to have a revenue measure approved and submitted to the county by August 1st. So this is what the timeline, the absolute minimum timeline to be able to get that done, data methodology, 1 to 2 months. At the same time, they're doing the engineer's report, 1 to 2 months, might be 3 months in reality. The RFP lays it out for a July election if we did an assessment. There's a 45-day notice. Once what would happen is the engineer's report's done, board would review that with the assessment engineer. If you approve that report, then a notice goes out, similar to like we did on the water rates. A 45-day notice, they'll get their ballot, and then there'll be a public hearing, and that's when the ballots are due. Then there's a tabulation that occurs. Basically, the if you vote yes, it's got one barcode or a QR code. If you vote no, it has a different QR code. And so if you vote yes, let's just say $1,000, okay? Make it easy, $100. So if you're a yes vote, there's $100, you know, when they scan the barcode. But no vote, zero. Yes vote, $100, no vote, zero. Now, and they scan the number of ballots received. And at the end, if the dollar amount of the yes votes exceeds the dollar amount of the no votes, then it passes. And we can adopt that. That's the way it works. So the goal in something like that is that you get those that support property owners, that support a fire department, to turn in their ballot. They don't turn in your ballot, it's a zero. Doesn't go either way. Basically supports the no stake. You still have to have, you know, 50% of that can come back.
Maybe I missed it. Do we know what kind of a tax rate we're looking at?
No. That's what the assessment engineer, basically what we'll do is together as a team, we'll work out we've got the capital improvement equipment replacement schedule. We're updating that. We know what the CAL FIRE contract costs are now, and we can predict that pretty closely into the future. And, I mean, those are the two main things. The rest is just that staffing component. How much time we expect our employees to spend directly on, you know, maintaining the facilities, maintaining the equipment, you know, day-to-day stuff, you know, fuel, insurance, that kind of stuff. Pretty predictable. We update that. We take that, we project it out over the years. What kind of CPI does that look like it would trigger? And then the assessment engineer, the public finance person, do that benefit analysis to look at the benefit on single-family properties, multifamily properties, commercial businesses, different types of commercial businesses, vacant land. And they have a very specific analysis because they have to identify the special benefit of experts on the property. They have to document it. So it come back to you as a presentation that explains all of that. There could be need for some polling if it comes back like it's going to be $500 a year or something like that, and we feel that that's just not supported for some reason. Put it out there and people overwhelmingly say no in a poll. I may have to make some decisions with this board. It doesn't change how the
assessment would be applied property, but the amount, the assessment, you know, if we had to scale it back to make sure we have success, because we really don't have two chances. We have two chances in that if we move forward with this assessment report and the financial impact analysis that we're recommending, if for some reason we do the 50% mail ballot and it gets haywire, it comes back, it doesn't pass, we still have the ability to transition immediately, get it on the November ballot for the general election for a special tax. Okay, we can use that methodology to generate a uniform rate, which is we have to do with the special tax. Assessment can be variable based on the type of impact. The special tax is uniform. We can move it back and bring it before the voters in November for one last shot. We wouldn't receive any money until, if it was successful, we weren't receiving money until December of 27. So we'd have to have some interim financing. But we've learned that there are such things as tax anticipation loans or tax anticipation notes that we can issue. We're going to pay interest on it, but it would allow us to be able to borrow money in anticipation of the money we receive in the future if it's successful in November. If it fails in July, if we do an assessment, you know, a property owner mail ballot in July, it fails, and if we bring it to the voters in November and it fails again,
so the assessment, when do you receive them?
November.
No, it would be.
You voted on November.
Well, with the assessment,
the one that gets mailed.
Let me just go into the recommendation. And I can give you the timeline because it's in the packet of our case. But that was easy to understand. Okay, so recommendation is to proceed with the Prop 218 benefit assessment as the primary option. Okay? There's no set election schedule for that. So as quickly as we can get the assessment engineer's report done, as soon as we get through the board evaluation of that and get the board's, if you agree with it and we adopt the resolution, 45 days after that, they recommend 55 to make sure that everybody receives their ballot and everything. So 55 days after the board adopts that notice of intent, that accepting that report, and we can have the mail public hearing. I would mail the ballot as soon as the board accepted it. Then we'd have the public hearing 55 days later and tabulate the results. As long as we have that done for the first week of August and had time to make sure that everything was good. Our meeting in July was great. Then it would go on the tax roll for 26, 27, and we would get money in December
and then 27.
Yeah. We might be able to go by without borrowing any money for that, but if it fails, then it goes on November 11th. We'd absolutely have to borrow money. If it was successful.
It's in front of us at the moment, lawful put is authorizing RFP to go and getting the information that's involved here. But we don't really need to. We know, roughly speaking, what the process is. We don't really know any details because we don't. So I'm going to move that we adopt resolution 42-5 authorizing the general manager to issue a request for proposals to retain a finance consultant and assessment engineer if our services
Any public comment?
Thank you. So, CalFire perspective, obviously, we love being your fire department. We've been 2-0 staff since we came over. 2-0 staffing, for those of you that don't know, is 2-person minimum on the fire engine. Coming from an operational standpoint, as a BC that responds to all fires within the county, vehicle accidents, whatever, two personnel is a very hard thing to manage on a fire ground. You know, some of you have been fire personnel in the past, and you can probably attest to what a 2.0 engine versus a 4.0 engine can do on a fire ground. Some restrictions we have while going to incidents, it's actually making entry into the structure. We have what's called a two-in, two-out policy, which basically provides protection for the two people that are going into the structure. The only time that we can go away from or deviate from that policy when it's a known life rescue, meaning there is a known victim inside, we potentially know where their location is, some parameters have to go through to be able to justify that we know somebody's in there, we're putting a child. Two people up here on the hill, like I like to call it. Obviously, we have 631, who's also a 2.0 engine. So those two coming tandem to an incident is huge with having your minimum two in well on an incident. I'll say during middle of summer, you're going to have two engines from Groveland P that are immediately behind you also. So Cal Fire has already adopted that 3.0 standard, having three minimum person on each engine. Back in 2006, moved primarily to a 4.0 engine for 3 years until funding got cut and we went back down to NFPA, which is National Fire Protection Association. 1710 is what it is. 2001, they did a study that basically said that the recommendation from NFPA for an engine company is 4.0. It's four people on duty on that engine. They have your two in, two out. Efficiencies on structure fires or whatever type of incident that you're going to is at the most successful rate of making sure that, you know, loss of life and property is no more priority. Cal Fire, I think it was a year or two ago, our director, Joe Tyler, recommended that all county contracts or any type of contract with Cal Fire be up to a 3.11 position for every single engine. 3.11 meaning you have your 3.0 staffing, one additional person on your payroll for that rotational, whatever you have, sick leave schedules and everything. That brings an engine company up to 10 personnel staffing if you were to have that 3.11 staffing. And our staffing model usually is three captains, three engineers, three firefighter twos, and then one additional position. To be able to drive and operate the engine or to not, that rotational. So there are other options as three captains and all engineers. So you have that company officer experience, especially in a rural area, that's super. But you have that traditional staffing model. So obviously that the director's direction to get to that 3.11 was by 2027. And I know he and my boss have had discussions on this to try to see what it's going to cost and see where we're going to go as your guys' county contract, 3-year contract, I should say. So I'd like to close by just saying we love being up here, love serving the community. A lot of the employees that work here are local. We'll remain that way. Any questions?
Also, eventually go to 56-hour work.
Yes. So
you have to take that in.
Yeah. Wow. So right now we went from a 84 to a 72. Now we're at a 66, which is huge for us. Basically what it means is all of our personnel are on a rotating schedule, 2 days back every two work periods, months. And that's on a 66 work week. So it's basically they're working 3 on 4 off for 3 weeks and 2 on 5 off for a fourth. So it gave us one more day to be home with our families, things like that. But in our next contract, which is we're starting negotiations August or April of 2026 through our labor union, basically they're going to be pushing for that 56-hour work week, which is three rotational shifts at stations, like I described to you, for 3 point staffing. It'll be three captains, three engineers, three firefighter twos, traditional, where you do three captains and six engineers. That's coming. ALMC, which is Joint Labor Management Committee between fire, our union, they talk monthly, and they're developing plans to make sure they have the staffing be able to support that and obviously notify contracts. It's coming down the pipe.
Also, four on a truck.
Four on a truck company. And as most of you know, we don't have a designated county fire PCSD truck company that has dedicated staffing for four at minimum. Truck companies, obviously, they are specialty equipment for commercial use, high-rise fires, rescue. In a lot of situations, the only two that we have here currently in Tuolumne County is Cross-Staff 2-0 out of Tuolumne Rancheria, and then Cross-Staff 2-0 out of Sonora City. And it's a mutual aid request for any incident. So say we have a commercial structure, you know, in downtown Groveland. We as the battalion chief would have to mutual aid request to that organization for them to bring that truck if it's in service.
More about fire services than you have about, you know, all these months, you know.
Is there a run on firefighters applying for the engineer?
So, I'm glad you asked that. This week alone, Tuolumne Calaveras units making 39 job offers to fire apparatus engineers. So that's because of CAL FIRE transitioning from traditional staffing model of one company officer and two firefighters. They're actually transitioning all equipment year to 2 years to traditional staffing, captain, engineer, firefighter. So with that increase, by April of 2027, we're supposed to have all of our single engine houses transition to traditional staffing, and we're going to start. Groveland should be the first two engine E house, basically, to both engine staffed. We have six fire captains, six engineers, six fires.
Awesome.
But yeah.
Nice. Well, we have, this makes me nervous because we feel the blast. Yeah.
Not by a lot. Are you ever right? It wasn't.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a blowout.
There came with the county and there was a general tax. And that's that, I mean, we did analyze the possibility of a general tax because we have the authority to do it. And those are by 50% voter approval, but they're just they're getting sued. They're also, you know, and every year there's been legislation to try to overturn that. And it's just, you know, again, we got we're concerned about giving money to government in general. It's not, it can't be earmarked. The general tax can be earmarked fire service.
And those voting no on it last time said that.
Yep. So the assessment it is earmarked.
Yes.
That's
very, very strictly.
I think that's the way we should go. Plus, it gives us. That doesn't pass, we can try and get the next one passed.
And then the earlier if it comes, if it doesn't.
So just to touch on also on county business, I know us as CAL FIRE and the contract have noticed the county also into the 3.11 staffing model for all 5A. That is the goal, that contract also. You know, minimum. Plays it.
Yes. County. Sorry, good. What's going on? I was up Sawmill Mountain this last week, and they're putting in that next one that's right there on Sawmill. Next resort.
Under Canvas one?
Under Canvas is across the street.
How long the year ever?
I think it's, yeah. Because Under Canvas is already. Their construction, and it's across the street from
Sawmill.
I don't know if I'm correct. But they're doing our next one, which is on Sawmill. And my question, do you know, Pete, if they doing a fire assessment on that at all? Or
still just haven't talked to your supervisor. They did approve the condition of a fair share fee in that. They just, you know, I don't know if you've been involved in those conversations, but you know, fair share fee was to make a determination whether they could do a community facilities district. What? But yes, they did intend to get some money from it, both under Canvas and Terravie. And hopefully they will. The indications that I'm getting from our junior supervisors is they have no interest. But that is up to...
But yet the county goes, is going broke.
Well, they still think they can pull off a miracle and move stuff around. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. We have to just keep pushing for it because it's
that. They don't have anybody in code enforcement. That's huge. That should be. I don't understand her. Say it.
Learning the hard way.
Yeah. Okay. So
it's a no-brainer.
And do we think we're at a point where we can make a motion and we can get this RFP out?
Yeah, we made
a
motion. John seconded it.
So oh, yeah, I did.
All
okay.
In favor, say aye.
Aye.
You opposed? 5-0.
All right.
So, okay.
All right. No.
We'll move on to 7B.
B is the. Be done.
Oh, no.
It's actually 7C. The meeting.
Regular meeting date is
yeah.
D.
D. D, yeah. I'm sorry. D.
B. Tentative Water Supply, AWS, Water Treatment Plant Project Update Report, including project closeout requirement.
I covered pretty much everything in the report sections that you might be interested in about the status of the project, but I did include a closeout report because understanding what has to be submitted and by what time, I think is important for the board to understand that that's management's responsibility. When I say all of us, we make sure the engineer and the contractor and our staff, us, work diligently to get all of this stuff together and accepted by the state by the 28th. Nothing gets submitted after the 28th except for a request. Retention. All construction work has to be done and all documentation has to be submitted. And, you know, I mean, we've been submitting the progress reports and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, this Appendix A just lists a whole host of deliverables. It's in the contract of things that I have to make sure that the engineer has together and submit. You know, like revised operating plans that are approved by the state and how we're going to operate the plant. And so it's a little bit overwhelming, and I'm just providing you this that for any other reason other than to let you know we've got our eyes on it, focused on it, we're going to get it done. It's a lot of work, but that's why I said we're going to reboot after the first of the year. It's going to feel so good. Hopefully by the first of the year, we got most of the stuff done and submitted, and the project is constructed and everything's operating. But... any additional questions on AWS? This is the DWR project in total. It was the three different projects. Water main tank in Big Oak Flat, the groundwater well, and the AWS relink. Three different identifiable projects. We did that because they were on different time tracks. But we're all going to finish up. A lot of work.
It must be a quiet time here.
Right. Be quiet.
No, it hasn't been.
The chairs are something.
Any other discussion on that? Can I get a motion for 7B?
There's no motion.
Oh, it's just an information session. So then we shall move on to, let's see, adoption of resolution designating the applicant's district's agent for a grievance and related matters with Cal OES during emergencies. Cal OES from 30 non-state agencies.
So yes, this, yeah, this form and resolution comes to you guys every 3 years for a list of designated signers to be able to receive monies from for emergency disaster related damages happen. Have benefited from this in the past, like storm damage that we had in 17 and even more recent last winter, maybe. And Louis takes care of all of the actual damages that happen, but this comes before you guys every 3 years. Last time it was before you was in April of 23. And I was going to move it out to March, but it doesn't hurt us to just take care of it. I don't want to forget about it. So I figured it's soon enough. Let's just take care of it if you are so inclined. And
move to adopt resolution 33-2025 designating the applicant's district quotations agent for agreements and related matters during emergencies. Cal OES 130 non-state agencies.
I'll second that. Here.
Aye.
Aye, and or any comments at the same time. And aye.
Your mind's up.
Yeah, all righty. Next is item C. Adoption of resolution designated designating the applicants, which district agreements of training. Well,
we're moving to E. We just did that one. And we removed E.
Yeah, I just wrote on the top of my piece. Okay. E.
Yeah.
E as in Edward. Discussion regarding mandatory and desired board training and conference attendance for the calendar year 2026.
I wanted to nominate John.
Wait, we're not on that item. We're just on the training. Wait. We all confused. Hold on.
Yes, we are.
Let me get there.
Confused.
70.
Yes, 70. Okay, so last month when we were discussing the board norms and protocols, I had discussed with you guys that I want to get into better practice and bring the board trainings and conferences to you guys every December. I sent out an email the other day showing where everybody's mandatory trainings are, including the new one that we all need to do. So I think every year I'll send that out, and then I sent you all a task to do. So like John, you'll have a task show up on your calendar in 2 years because you're that current, you know? So everybody has a different time frame when their certificates are due. So I send out that as a reminder for you guys. So just go ahead and accept those tasks so that they pop up in your calendar. And then, as far as annual training, I think December is an appropriate time to discuss it and kind of get a game plan for the year. And I listed everything that was available within the calendar, as well as with the CSDA conferences. But then there's also an SDRMA incentive. Jen already spoke on that, and you guys are mostly aware of it. Bob, you might not know, we get incentive hit points with our insurance company for specific board and staff training. And so we can maximize 16 points per year in both the property liability and then the workman's comp side. And
percentage off.
Yes. So, unfortunately, we only got 2 points in both counts this year. And so we want to try to start maximizing incentive points to help the district and the county. So I gave you all of the SDRMA criteria for the CIP. So it is looking over courses, classes, trainings, and out what you would be interested in participating. And then as well as the CSDA conferences and trainings, I think that the legislative good for a board member. Obviously the annual conference. Was that? A good governor.
Leadership Academy.
Yeah. Legislative, you gotta be.
Are you?
Yes, you can rent a scooter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so also within this training, I am starting to go through the application checklist for the renewal of the transparency certificate, as well as the districts of distinction certificate. And that has so much requirements. And I can send you a checklist and so you can see all of the different trainings that we have to show. And so, yeah, if you guys can just kind of wrap your heads around what trainings you want to do, get back to me. I said in the staff report by January 31st that gives you enough time. But yeah, if you can just let me know, and then that way I can sign you guys up for trainings, room accommodations, travel, whatever is necessary. That way, as I know, Nancy and Janice both wanted to go for the annual conference this year. It's the president. And by the time we went to go make reservations, it there was no more available.
Yeah, they can block a
room.
Big block. But it's getting more and more popular, so the block goes really fast.
Very.
So not like hours, but within the first month of the when the registration.
Yes. And so just to give you guys a heads up, we did discuss internally this week, as this is a topic. Pete will obviously be at the annual conference and go to the GM summit. Jen, Michelle, myself, and have decided to also attend the annual conference this year. And I think said, yes, he does want to go to the GM with. So that's kind of where staff is right now. And I'll be making those reservations. You guys just let me know.
Yeah, since it's just kind of new for me, I'll just kind of what you tell me you recommend I go to.
Okay. That sounds good. Yeah. Okay.
So on the annual, is there any open spots?
Oh, yeah. Everything's still open.
Yeah. So the annual conference is the one that you went to before and you enjoyed very much. Yeah. That one is August 24th through 27th in Palm Springs.
Palm Desert.
Yeah. Desert.
Oh, you said Palm Springs yesterday or the other day when we were talking about. That's why I was like,
yay.
Palm Desert.
Palm Desert.
Palm Desert was fun too. The
same thing.
They are pretty much the same.
I was going to say, are they right next door to each other?
Yeah. City, yeah.
This is like saying Groveland and Big Oak.
What's that?
I said, I guess it's kind of like saying Groveland or
Big Oak. Last time I got a ride back to the airport in a Tesla, and somebody.
Do people drive down there, or it's weird how they fly?
Pete drove us 2 years ago when we went, and then Janice and Louie and I flew. Yeah, but you fly into Ontario, and then on the way to the hotel, we got an Uber. We just split it or whatever. So, But we do, yeah. I mean, if you didn't want to drive your own car, we also have the PIMP or, you know, the benefits for the CSDA.
We had a conversation about this. More than like 300 miles is cheaper to rent in Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just ask.
10 miles is Palm Desert.
They pay you 78 cents a mile. You drive your own car. Mr. Goes,
and we also have the admin car if there's a couple of you that want to hop in and trip together. You can use the admin car. Where there's a will, there's a way. Okay. So, any questions? What you are?
Start signing up.
Just please. I'll probably bug you again.
Of course, just join out there because the demand is getting higher. The venues, with the attendance exceeding 1,000 people now on the annual conference, it limits the number of venues that they can go to, and things get purchased up faster. And we always want to make sure that if you want to go, that you, number one, get the room rate, then the opportunity that you get in at the hotels that have to go across town. So much more convenient to pop up with CLA,
I think we need list. To. I think that's one of the
requirements. The first thing you should go to is one of sessions.
Yes.
As long as I can. Leadership. It's very. Everything for a lot of stuff. It's the one you went to in Napa. I was one of the first ones.
Yeah.
That's the one that you had to do the different modules. And
right.
It's very frustrating because you were in the boardroom by yourself, remember, and it wasn't working.
Oh, that's
like at the beginning of COVID, I think. So you had to just sit in there by yourself. Couldn't help.
Yeah.
All day.
All we could do, everything you can do for August, it really helps.
Yeah,
that's what helps. I'm in a position where I can actually go to the
logical.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
So I think, I was able to take wife to Napa, and we stayed an extra in the wine.
I've been up
there. And then she came with me.
Monterey.
Right.
I don't know why your catalog hasn't started CSDA, but if you log into your online account, you'll be able to go to the Learn tab and see all of the trainings that are available. Give everybody else their catalog today.
I got my computer all
locked. Well, we're out of college.
It's like on the third page, it has a preview of 2026 trainings. I haven't received it. Anyways, it has a preview.
Yours, amazing.
This came in yesterday.
I love it.
It's training.
It's training.
Perfect. Thank you, guys.
And item 7F. Election of board officers for calendar year 2026.
I changed my mind, so I'm not. Nominate John Armstrong, president. He has been with the board for 15 years.
Yeah. Second career.
Yes. Yeah. I think he'd be good at it. Good at it. We've all grown as a board, right up there at the top. Board members, though.
Second that. It's always weird how we do this. We do one at a time, or we do all of them It's up to your preference on how you do it. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, CSEA does it individually. Some boards do it all together as a slate.
We would do it one at a time because
exactly.
In each case, well.
Are there any other sessions?
Voting on who's going to be the president, the vice president, or secretary.
Oh, okay. I'll nominate Janice as the vice president.
Okay, well, so we're going to vote on them individually or separately. Okay. Just yes.
Accept the nomination.
Any other nominee? You want to come into a second after? Or doing it as a president. Yes, you can nominate.
And we obviously.
And I will. Point Richard Perlman.
No.
Okay, so here's the vote. We have it's nominated John, Bob seconded it. On that, so Janice. John nominated Janice. Bob seconded that. Bob, what was the word you
nominated?
Appointed Rachel, board secretary. This is for president. This is
Bob. Second.
I didn't get a second.
Did I get a second? Yeah,
second.
Oh, you did.
Yeah, okay. I'll second.
I didn't hear anything. Thank you.
Oh, all in favor? This slate of officers, I say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Here we go.
If you guys ever want a formal process for this, let me know. In some boards, it gets controversial.
We have a band. We have a band.
Maybe. When you have a 30-person board, you have to have a procedure.
Yeah,
definitely. I mean, because you could have more than one
officer.
I liked your question. Are there any other nominations? Because, you know, that it happened at CSDA, and it never had before. And it was when I was running the session that all of a sudden there was competition. It was weird. It was, and it never happened.
So we are adjourned at 3:30.